Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, March 10th. I'm Lauren Schmidt reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, decomposed body found on River Bar near Scotia. Coco Ross launches Rain Gauge Rally to recruit North Coast citizen scientists. And CAL FIRE reclassifies fire risk in Ukiah. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Over the weekend, a decomposed body was discovered on the north side of the Eagle Prairie Bridge, which connects the town of Riodel and Scotia, Saturday afternoon. According to our news partner, Redheaded Black Belt, at approximately 1:50 p.m., scanner reports indicated that Riodel police were at the scene, standing by with the individual who initially reported finding the body. However, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office has since taken over the investigation, as the location falls within their jurisdiction. The area near the bridge is known to have a large homeless encampment, but it is unclear at this time whether the deceased individual had any connection to the camp. Several individuals remain missing in the county, and some families have speculated that the discovery could be connected to one of these cases. However, no official information has been released at the time of this report. KMUD News reached out to the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office for more information, but our calls have not yet been returned. KMUD News will continue to share updates. Wet and unsettled weather is returning to our area, making this a great time to participate in citizen science with the National Weather Service in Eureka during their annual Coco Ross Rain Gauge Rally. Matthew Kidwell, the lead meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka and the regional co-coordinator for the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network, or Coco Ross, shares more.
Coco Ross is a rain gauge network established in Colorado in the 90s in response to some serious flooding. They didn't really have a good idea of how much rain fell that caused this really serious flooding. So the idea behind this is everyone across the country in this network has the same rain gauge, and they take their measurements at the same time each day. So they get a good picture of the rain that fell each day across the whole country.
The Rain Gauge Rally is a national competition among Coco Ross networks to sign up as many new volunteers as possible during the month of March.
All the states across the country are pitted against each other in this Rain Gauge Rally, and so California has never been really very high in those numbers. So we've got always a push to try to get to look better in those numbers for our state.
The program relies on volunteers to gather detailed information about weather patterns in different micro-communities, which helps improve weather research and forecasting.
For example, in the King Range, we have 7 or 8 really good observers up and down the spine of the King Range, and in that area, we have only 2 automated gauges. So having these, 8 daily observers gives us a really good idea of how the terrain influences the rainfall. And then you can conduct studies on that to help improve the forecast models in the future.
The National Weather Service in Eureka currently has 77 citizen observers, but Coco Ross is working to increase that number. Different areas of our region experience varying weather patterns, and having more volunteers helps to create a more complete and accurate picture of local weather.
Yeah, a lot of times the King Range can get 5 or 6 inches, while here in Eureka we might get less than an inch, so just the terrain plays a really big role. And right now, one of the bigger gaps in our network is Southeast Humboldt. We don't have anybody in Aller Point or anybody down in that area right now. So really, any rural areas, we'd love to have observers everywhere, more observers. But the biggest need is the rural areas where there's not as many people, so not as many options for volunteers.
Even though the program's name emphasizes rain, snowfall data is equally important.
Because while we might have some automated rain gauges, there's no automated snowfall gauges in Humboldt County. So any snow that falls, we rely entirely on citizens to let us know where it's falling and how much.
Kidwell says now is a great time to sign up and start contributing, especially as a storm system is currently heading towards our region, placing all of Trinity County under a winter storm warning.
Yeah, so Wednesday we've got quite a bit of rain moving in, you know, an inch to an inch and a half in Eureka and probably 3 to 4 inches in the hills surrounding the area on Wednesday. And then we kind of transition to more showery pattern Wednesday night and Thursday. Snow levels will drop to around 2,000 to 2,500 feet, and then we'll also have the chance for small hail along the coast.
Rain is expected to continue into next week, providing an ideal opportunity to track precipitation totals.
We've got, you know, additional systems Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all lined up here. A little bit of a wet period.
If you'd like to join the Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network, you can sign up online.
It's all on the COCORAHS website, COCORAHS.org. There are some YouTube videos you can take for training and then sign up. And we do, in the rural areas, we have a few rain gauges that the state gave us to hand out. So if you're committed to be observing and don't have any observers right near you, there's a form you can fill out to request a rain gauge.
When asked if the need for more volunteers is tied to recent federal cuts to NOAA and other weather-related agencies, Kidwell did not directly respond, but stated that the National Weather Service is always looking for more citizen scientists to participate. According to the COCORAHS website, California is currently ranked 17th in the Rain Gauge Rally, with only 4 new citizen scientists signing up so far. Minnesota is leading the competition with over 100 new volunteers. For more information or to sign up, you can visit www.cocorahs.org. Turning to Mendocino, last week the Ukiah City Council was briefed on new CAL FIRE maps that reclassify large areas of the city as being at a higher fire risk. KZYX's Elise Cox reports.
CAL FIRE released the new maps detailing fire hazard severity zones on February 24th.
There's 3 different types of severity in these fire hazard severity zones: very high, high, and moderate. It's pretty clear if you look at the map that the amount of parcels now in the very high fire hazard severity zone has increased significantly. So, for example, in the previous maps, most of the west side of Ukiah was not included in very high, except when you got into the actual western hills where there's not a lot of structures. Now it's pretty much most of west side Ukiah is in a very high fire hazard severity zone.
Ukiah City Manager Sage San Giacomo said the city strongly believes the original maps were accurate.
We've based all of our mitigation measures, our shaded fuel break, our dozer lines, and all of the work that we've done for the past 10, 15 plus years on that original mapping, and really want to understand why the maps have changed. And there's much bigger implications here related to ADU development, lot line splits, infill development. While CAL FIRE on the Frequently Asked Questions page says that there's no implications for insurance, I'm not quite sure who believes that. That's, I think, absolutely ridiculous, frankly.
Council member Juan Orozco said the city will try to do everything it can to get the fire marshal to reconsider.
Of course, everybody is in danger of, in risk of a fire, but compared to other areas, we haven't had a fire here in the western hills of Ukiah for close to 100 years. And to make such a huge huge change in the fire zones, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's definitely going to affect the property owners in the area, insurance-wise, talking about.
Yeah, and also resale value of the home.
Exactly.
The new CAL FIRE maps are on top of the challenge Ukiah was already facing with new flood zone maps from FEMA. While the city is seeking to do its own study to try and influence the FEMA maps, there is less opportunity to influence the CAL FIRE maps.
And all we can do is that we can increase the area that one of those zones is applied to, or we can increase the severity of certain zones, but we can't decrease the severity or the area.
Mayor Doug Crane said it sounds like the city's hands are tied.
The thing that I took away from it was the that CAL FIRE establishes they declare what the fire risks are where by zone and severity. An agency, city, can establish a more restrictive standard, but they cannot reduce the standard that's imposed by the state. So it's my understanding we have no ability to roll back something that may not be appropriate or may even be egregious.
Slaughter said CAL FIRE has not yet specified what the new maps will mean for property owners.
Well, they're still developing the final rulemaking for what's going to occur, but we know from past rulemaking processes that there's something called a 5-foot ember resistant zone, which means that 5 feet around the perimeter of your structure, you're not to have any types of plants or any other combustible materials, mulch, etc. They are saying that there will be a 3-year phase-in period for existing construction, but for new construction, it will apply right away.
For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox.
KMUD is currently holding its spring membership drive with the theme, Education by the People, for the People. This week, KMUD News is highlighting this theme and those who put it into action here on the North Coast and beyond. KMUD's Sigur Bjorn brings you the details of tonight's spotlight.
Dr. Ruhalla Avasaleh was the only faculty member at Cal Poly Humboldt to be arrested during the 8-day standoff between students and police at the university campus last spring. The assistant professor refused bail and went on hunger strike until the last student had been released from county jail. Despite all charges being dropped against them, Dr. Avasaleh's immigration status is at risk, echoing events happening all across the country at this very moment. In a conversation with KMUD's Lorna Schmidt, Dr. Avasaleh spoke about their experience of the protest, its aftermath, and why there is still tension on campus.
Growing up as a student, I always had this understanding that education is not only about learning subject matters, memorizing, or developing skills. It's also about some social engagement, is about some social and political understanding. As I grew older and went through higher degrees in higher education, I realized this is a more heavy responsibility for us, those of us who carry those three letters of PhD at the end of our names. We are supposed to be engaged with what's going on in the world, in our community. And we need to take actions. We cannot be neutral or indifferent. Indeed, being indifferent is actually taking a side. Being indifferent means you are taking sides with the status quo. It's hard not to think about those times. Those 8 days have been very significant, very impactful. I think on the history of this campus and also on our personal lives. those of us who have been personally and directly impacted. So the arrest was definitely a traumatic event. That was not anything that anybody was looking forward to. I was there to make sure when that moment happens, there is someone who can support them. Maybe I can de-escalate things, or maybe I can comfort some of those who were hurt. And I'm glad that I was able to do a little bit of that job. I told this to the campus administration after I came back from my suspension, that they could end my career, but I'm the most accomplished teacher. What would be more rewarding for a teacher than being able to comfort a student in jail? The weeks after the arrest was very intense. People were in shock, in grief, in needed healing. We started reading, writing, healing circles with colleagues, with friends, with community members and students off campus. We had gatherings to help each other process the time. Some of those wounds are deeper than the others. Your listeners probably know one of the arrestees does not live with us anymore. She passed on June 6, almost 5 weeks after the arrest. She was a very brilliant and beautiful trans woman, very critical, very caring, very kind. So all kind of trauma, all kind of pressures were on us. I was probably one of the only, or maybe the only arrestee who was not an American citizen. And there was a concern, and still there is a concern, of that arrest record being used against me in my immigration procedures, which is ongoing. So that is not completely resolved, even though the district attorney has dropped the charges and rejected the police report. So there is anxiety in the community, on campus, coming from different causes. There is still an open wound from last year that is not healed. I know campus is doing some efforts to address that, but I think we need more rigorous, more active actions to address that healing. And as time goes, it does not heal itself. It gets just worse. Knowing that there is a widening gap between students, between campus and the admin and the state, it's very likely that we will have some tension, because all the ingredients needed for attention is there. One thing that I have been reminding my colleagues, the admin, and also the students, was whatever you do, whatever ideology or agenda you advocate for, remember that first and foremost, you are a human. And the other group that is in opposition with you, they are also humans. It's very easy for us to dehumanize the other side by imagining them as terrorists, as bigots, as, you know, unlimited variety of labels. Those are not helpful. Most of the time, those are not accurate also. I have been always telling my students that polarization is more dangerous than any other ideology. Polarization is more dangerous than white supremacy, than racial injustice, than transphobia, homophobia, We know through the history that all major conflicts in this world started after years of polarization. Polarization makes us do not see the other reality, do not see the other people's truth. And it's hard to say this as an activist. This is hard to believe and to embody this as a person who cares about oppression, who cares about those who are being murdered, assaulted, injured, taken away from their lands. We cannot change the world without trying to understand our enemies, our opposition, our other sides. It's easy for us to dismiss them. It's easy to think they are not intellectuals, they are stupid, they are not understanding. These are our mental mechanisms to keep us safe. I think we need to dig and we need to actively seek their arguments to understand them. So in this political climate right now, I do think and I do advise students and peers and community members to reach out to somebody that they think is different from them ideologically and try to understand them. It's okay to fight with them. It's okay to argument with them. It's okay to engage in heated conversations with them. It is not okay to dismiss them and to pretend that they do not exist.
That was Cal Poly Humboldt Assistant Professor Dr. Ruhalla Awasaleh speaking to Lauren Schmidt. An extended version of the interview will air on KMUD at a later date.
In national news, House Republicans demand the removal of D.C.'s Black Lives Matter plaza. Catherine Carley reports.
We have bigger fish to fry than fights over what has been very important to us and to the history, and especially our ability to keep our city safe during that time.
Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser says she won't argue with the White House over its request to rename the city's Black Lives Matter Plaza. A BLM mural covering two downtown blocks became a focal point for residents following the murder of George Floyd. The decision to paint over the mural comes after House Republicans moved to force Bowser to rename the area Liberty Plaza or risk losing federal funds. The Department of Justice has dropped its lawsuit against Texas, arguing the state's legislative and congressional maps violate the Voting Rights Act. Texas civil rights activist Antonio Arellano says the current maps dilute the voting power of Latinos.
The redistricting process is all about who's going to have money and power for the next decade. 95% of the population growth was led by people of color. That's exactly who should be calling the shots in Texas.
The Justice Department has also withdrawn from a Biden-era voting rights case against Virginia over the removal of names from voter rolls. Officials in Georgia have requested the DOJ drop a lawsuit over the state's 2021 overhaul of election laws. Speaker Mike Johnson has introduced a bill to keep the government funded through September and avoid a government shutdown this week. It increases spending for defense and deportations while cutting more than $13 billion from domestic programs. A bipartisan group of nearly 1,000 political scientists have denounced Donald Trump's administration for rapid cuts to programs and staff. Montana State University professor Sarah Rushing says democracy is not a business and requires checks and balances.
We have these procedures and practices built in to slow things down, build consensus, abide by processes, and make sure that things are fair and transparent.
The White House counters it's merely holding federal agencies accountable as required by the Constitution. The administration has canceled more than $400 million in grants and contracts with Columbia University, claiming the school has not done enough to combat anti-Semitism on campus. But Carol Garvin with the ACLU of Maine says the threat to funding has a partisan edge well beyond what the White House calls illegal protests over the Israel-Hamas war.
Regardless of what the root of the protest is, it could be used to pressure universities to clamp down on protests whenever the protests express a view that the Trump administration disagrees with.
Trump has threatened to deport international students who take part in protests. Immigration agents arrested a Palestinian graduate student and Columbia protest organizer over the weekend. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Democrats blast Musk's plan to gut Social Security Agency and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. KPFA's David Hummel shares this report.
Democratic leader Chuck Schumer and other Democratic senators are slamming Elon Musk's moves to gut Social Security, the bedrock of America's social safety net. Elon Musk has repeatedly called Social Security a Ponzi scheme. Schumer fired back at a Democratic news conference.
Elon Musk says Social Security is the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. The richest man in the world is telling Americans that earned benefits that they depend on and they paid into are a scam. Tell that to the average Social Security recipient who depends on that $1,100 or $1,500 to buy food, pay the rent, go visit the grandkids. Tell them it's a Ponzi scheme. Tell them they don't deserve that money. It's outrageous. Why would they do this? They're in a frenzy to give tax breaks, tax cuts to the wealthiest, the very wealthiest billionaires in America.
The Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, ordered the firing of at least 7,000 Social Security employees of the 57,000-member workforce, and it plans to shutter 6 of the 10 regional offices. Reports indicate the Social Security Administration may eliminate up to 50% of its workforce in what the agency calls massive reorganizations, and SSA has now offered all employees incentives to leave the agency. Social Security field offices offer a full range of services, including applying for new or replacement Social Security cards, applying for Social Security and Supplemental Security Income, SSI, making changes to benefits information, and more. Democratic Senator Patty Murray.
Donald Trump and Elon Musk are taking a wrecking ball to the Social Security Administration and putting your Social Security benefits at risk. People need help getting Social Security at some of the most vulnerable points in their lives. Social Security is a promise that the American people should be able to count on after they pay into it their entire life. And a part of that promise means being able to get on the phone with an actual human being without having to wait on hold for an hour or more, being able to visit an in-office person to help you get your benefits without having to jump through hoops or drive hundreds of miles.
In 2023, SSA field offices had nearly 120,000 Americans visit every day. Now field office closures will force people to drive hours farther to get basic services. The DOGE website lists the termination of dozens of field office leases on its Wall of Receipts page, which has been grossly inaccurate, often offering little to no evidence of wasteful management behind the cuts. Democrats spoke outside HUD, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, with housing advocacy groups and supporters. Congresswoman Maxine Waters is chair of the House Financial Services Committee.
There go more homes in the hands of private investors with no federal oversight. Ladies and gentlemen, this is outrageous. There are over 771,000 people experiencing homelessness in our country. They're on the streets. They're with makeshift tents. They don't have anywhere to go. Elon Musk's 13 children sleep good at night. What happens to the other children in America?
Yeah!
DOGE task force plans reportedly include laying off half of the HUD workforce, eliminating half of HUD's field offices, and gutting critical programs that protect families and people with disabilities from discrimination, help address the housing and homelessness crisis, and support communities recovering from disasters. Congressman Alex Padilla also notes that the cuts to affordable housing grants will likely have severe consequences for Southern California aiming to rebuild from the Los Angeles fires. Reporting for KPFA News, I'm David Hummel.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Sigur Bjorn, Elise Cox, Catherine Carley, and David Hummel. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.